Hello and welcome to episode number 48 of the AgroNovations podcast, all things related and debated in agriculture. I'm your host, Frank Aragona. As promised, this episode we'll be dealing with clay pot Oya agriculture and irrigation with Larry Salee. This episode has been prepared and released onto our website, www.agronovations.com/podcast, on April 14th, 2009. And as promised, also, this is the first episode with our new website design. So please, if you get a chance, go over and take a look at agronovations.com. Lots of new content, great stuff. And let's dive right in to our interview with Larry Salee. We are with Larry Salee, who is with Seed and Light International. They are a nonprofit organization based in my hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Seed and Light International helps to promote community development projects and sustainable food production in the developing world. Welcome to the AgroNovations podcast, Larry.
Well, thank you for having me.
Today on the this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about clay pot irrigation. Now, this is an ancient technology that has a lot of relevance for water-scarce communities today. Larry, can you tell us about the origins of the clay pot irrigation technology?
Well, it's very interesting. No one can really claim origins because it probably was independently discovered over many years. It's such a simple system and such an obvious system. We know that some of the first references came out of Western China, where they were burying unglazed or partially waxed pots in the ground to store water and discovered that weeds would grow around it because there'd be some water weep out. We've seen it in archaeological discoveries pretty much around the world where they didn't know what it was for to start with or why they would find them in place. There's an example of a Roman garden where they found the pots in place and they couldn't figure out why they had these pots lined up in a row like that. But actually it was watering the grapevines, or most likely grapevines. So it's been independently discovered. It's moved around the world. It's a technology which, once you know it, it's so obvious you just take it with you wherever you go. We know that it came into into Mexico probably. We don't have direct knowledge yet that prior to the Spanish that we had Oyas in the Pueblo people, but we think they had them. We know they buried broken clay underneath parts of their gardens, and we think that there's some evidence that they were using Oyas even before then.
You have some great pictures on your website of these, and we will link to that so people can take a look. But for people who are listening and want to get an idea of what these clay pots are like, could you just describe them?
Sure. An Oya, the word Oya just means pot. We have a design that is more like a ball and a neck on a ball. We tried to use more natural shapes like pumpkin and squash and this kind of thing for our molds so that they look nice in the garden. But any shape that will hold enough water that you can place in the ground will work, whether it's an open pot or a closed pot like we use. We prefer to use the closed pot so we can put a rock on the top and keep bugs out. But it's unglazed fired clay. It can be made in any culture. It is best if it's a little higher fired than a brick. But any porous clay pot will work. Sometimes you see the Mexican water jug, where it weeps a little bit of water and cools the water on the inside. That's exactly the principle that we're using, only we're putting it in the ground.
Is this technology this ancient technology, as you described it, still being used in a lot of these native communities and traditional farming communities around the world?
Absolutely. It's probably, in some areas, the only way that they can put together an irrigation project. I can give you an example of Syria, where they go up on the hills to replace olive trees. They carry water up and use the large ollas that hold about 4 or 5 gallons of water, and they go like once a week to water the brand new trees. They've been doing that for centuries. They use the same kind of ollas for air conditioning, where they might have a hallway lined with these ollas, just evaporating water, just like we use evaporative here. But we use them in Africa quite a bit. Certainly in Sierra Leone has been a very rich area where people have learned to use them successfully. Senegal, it's very dry up there. And the desertification, because you can control the amount of water in a small area, it's very effective.
Can you tell us how the pots are used to irrigate the crops?
Yes. When you have an olla full of water, the water will weep slowly through the walls of the olla. And initially, it will saturate an area about half of the diameter of the original olla. As the plant begins to grow, the roots become more and more friendly with the olla, let's put it that way, and eventually will build a mat around the olla and draw water directly from the olla. It's an amazing thing to see after a season of growing a tomato or a squash on an olla to dig it up and find this bird's nest woven around the olla of roots. But it's this way, any water that goes in the olla is going to get into the plant, or at least 90% of it. It's a very, very efficient way of using water. We believe that the plant grows better on an olla because you're not saturating the soil and driving the air out of the soil. You're allowing the moisture to be drawn into the soil more as a vapor than you are as liquid water. So we think plants grow better with ollas just in general. I've been very successful in the garden with rows of them, and you can actually put tubes to fill them all at one time if you want to go that way. But probably the most effective use is in a large container or a small area in a garden where you can allow the plants to grow out on dry land and draw their water from the center. And this eliminates weeds and using a lot of water in your garden. And you can kind of sequester some of your soil around the olla to just sort of carry the plant, but not watering or really even using it. So it kind of puts it down. So next year you move your olla over 3 feet and you have brand new soil to work with. And that's very important in the third world where they don't have a lot of fertilizers and things like that.
Now, I was also reading this morning that the plants actually adapt to the ollas, and they can pull water out of the olla as they need it, and the olla releases water more rapidly as the plant requires the water.
Exactly.
And then in the case when it rains, the olla releases less water.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. That's why I was saying that you reach a balance around the olla of the amount of water vapor in the soil or the amount of water in the soil without saturating the soil and driving out the air, which is what kills most plants in overwatered gardens. When we flood irrigation, you use hundreds of gallons of water to put 3 inches of water in over a garden. And we wouldn't even use that in a season using ollas. I would say it's about a 70% efficient system overall. The longer the plant is on the olla, the more it becomes dependent on it, but the less chance for water to evaporate. We also are looking into burying the olla only halfway in hot locations to see if we can't cool some of the soil, allowing the olla to evaporate a little bit. And that's just kind of something new we're thinking about. We're going to try and do a couple of experiments with that to see if we can keep the soil a little bit cooler. I would direct people to go to our website, www.seedandlightinternational.org. That's all one word, seedandlight.org. And there's an article that I've written there on global weather change. And why I think ollas are so appropriate is that it really doesn't make any difference what the weather change is going to be, whether it's to the global warming or global cooling. I'm not in that argument at all. All I know is that we're talking about a shorter growing season. And I would really like to have people go and read the article on that they could understand that we're dealing, no matter what kind of climate change we're dealing with, we are most likely going to wind up with fewer ideal days to grow things. And that, I think, is when the olla really comes into value in rural areas of the world, where plants and seeds can be started easier around an olla. You're using a whole lot less water. You're creating an ideal root environment, which gives you the best environment to grow your plant, and you get the best out of it in the shortest time. And that is a very key part to growing with ollas. Now, we also, with Seed and Light, use a drip system. Chapin Water Matics puts out a wonderful system, a bucket system, which is a gravity-fed 5 or 10 gallon bucket to feed a tape strip out about 50 feet or so, two lines of it or so. And that works pretty well. And for large gardens where you'd have a half acre or something like that, probably drip is going to be still a very practical solution for that. You still use a lot less water and you grow a lot less weeds. But ollas are specifically useful for concentrated gardens where you're growing high-value crops, peppers, tomatoes, chilies, things like that, eggplant, things that have a high value and can be grown in a concentrated area. They work very, very well, and they're very efficient.
Well, speaking of the efficiency, I'd like to quote here from a paper I was reading by Bridget Martin. And she quotes some research. So let me just read this in terms of the efficiency. The University of Pretoria in Zambia, Africa, wishing to address the food insecurity issue because of drought, looked at methods to increase food and fiber production in their region. This need led to testing clay pots against traditional irrigation method of using watering cans. The results were profound. Water savings using clay pot were indicated for beans at 55%, cabbage 70%, and tomatoes 70%. Increased crop with Mexican apple trees was 87.5% using clay pots versus watering can at 19.2%. And citrus trees using clay pot experienced a 90% height increase versus watering can at 18.5% increase. And then it talks about seed mortality in apple trees. The Mexican apple tree lost only 3 plants with clay pot versus 18 with watering can, while the citrus tree only lost 1 plant versus 13. So there's some hard numbers.
That's a very interesting study. We have some studies out of Syria and Lebanon that pretty much say the same thing about grapes and olive trees, establishment of olive trees and such. The key is that the olla is providing the best root environment by not saturating that root out. And that's where your growth efficiency comes from, because you're giving it the very best environment for the roots to grow in. Often we spend all of our time trying to have the best environment for the top of the plant, where actually the growth is going to come from the establishment of a good, strong root system and the utilization of nutrients in the general area. Now, I would also mention this, that if you have very, very poor soil, like we have in some areas of Senegal, even some salty type soils, Oyas don't concentrate salts like a major irrigation. If you're irrigating with a lot of water, flood irrigating, and it's a little saline, you're going to concentrate that salt on your garden, where in Oya you're using so much less that the salt concentration builds much, much, much slower. So we found that a lot in Africa, where they do have some salty soils now, and in Central Asia, actually, Moldova is a good example. But I would have people look at every form of irrigation for their particular circumstance, but certainly not to overlook the fact that Oyas are available. We make them here in the United States. We have sent plans or how to make them overseas, and almost every culture has a pottery culture. And so it's very easy to transplant the technology. It's a very, very low tech. We recommend that the Oya have a little bit thicker a wall, that it be fired a little bit higher than what most pots are fired at, so it's has a little bit more structure to it, and it slows the water down. You don't want to smooth the surfaces of either side, and you generally need to stay somewhere, depending on the size of the plant, somewhere between a quart and 2 gallons. That's probably the most efficient sizes. If you get a whole lot bigger, you're drawing a lot of water down below where the roots are. Now, that's not true if you're trying to establish a large tree with it. There, in Mexico, they also have a clay tile method, where they take clay tiles and bury them in the garden. But it takes so much effort to do that, and so much more clay, that I think Oyas are more practical. Oyas in my garden now are about 5 years old, and they're still working fine. But if you do tend to lose some of your water flow, you can take the Oya and soak it in a vinegar water for several weeks, and it will eat out the additional calcium. And we've been able to kind of refurbish them a little bit that way. I haven't had much of that problem. We have not done any gray water through them, although I think that's going to be a study that we're going to work on. Certainly, turbid water is not a good idea, because it will tend to plug up the pot. So we like to have settled water if you're drawing it from a river or something like that, so that the water is clear enough to put in the Oya. Adding fertilizer, like a liquid fertilizer or something like that, to the Oya is probably not a good idea. We would prefer you use the cow tea on the outside, or if you're using a commercial fertilizer, on the outside of the Oya, not in through the Oya.
Now, what about something like a compost tea or some kind of organic product?
I still feel like that the tannins and such will tend to plug up the pores of the clay. Now, an interesting thing about the clay, when an Oya is empty, physically, when you look inside of it and see there's no more water inside, it doesn't mean that the Oya is empty, because the clay itself can hold about probably a fifth of the amount of water just inside the clay. And after the plant has attached itself to the Oya, just literally grows around it, it can draw water right from that clay. So you have a little reservoir there. Now, people ask me how often do you put water in the Oya? Well, it obviously depends upon the plant you're growing, how hot it is, how dry the air is, how much transpiration is going on with the plant, all of those things. Even if you're having to fill it every day, you're still using less water than you would in any other system. So what we do is not check the water that's in the olla. We check the water, we check the amount of moisture that's in the soil. If the soil is getting dry, it's time to add water. If your plants are wilting, then you need to be sure to check it. Like in Albuquerque, there are some days in Albuquerque you might have to fill your olla up more than once. Because once the plant begins to draw the water off the olla, it can draw quite a bit in a very short time. So you do want to check your ollas at least once a day to see if there's any need to add water. Early on in the season, the water may sit in there for 2 or 3 days. I think the myth of the olla is you only put water in it once a week and this kind of thing. Well, that may be true under certain circumstances, but in general, you have to kind of manage it. It's a low tech, but it does require some management. You do need to check it and see if there's a need to add water to it. Now, we like to use the ones with necks on them because that way it's easy to fill and we can put a little pebble on the top and keep any spiders or bugs or snails or anything else out of it, and I think you kind of want to do that. Now, there are some alternates to the olla that I will mention. My first experiments with this came after Dr. Curtis Smith from New Mexico State University called me and asked me what did I know about ollas, and I said virtually nothing, but I immediately began to look into it. And so the first ones that I built were built out of Italian clay pots, a dome. I took one that was kind of a round one, and I made a dome on the top, and then a regular 8-inch flower, tall flower pot, and I glued it together with a high-grade silicon glue. And you buy the expensive stuff if you're going to glue them together. And I plugged up the hole with silicon, and I filled the thing up with water. Through the little tiny hole in the bottom, and I found out I needed to use a funnel to get it full. And sure enough, it saturated out and began to weep a little bit on the outside. And I put it in the ground, and sure enough, it seemed to work pretty good. The first ones I didn't use very good glue on, and they sort of came apart. But after I got the expensive silicone, it held much better, and today it's still holding. That you can do, but then I found out that they wipe the surfaces of those so that they're almost sealed by a kind of a chamois wipe, and so you have to take a little bit of sandpaper to one side or both sides to get them to work very well. I've used an open flower pot in the ground that I glued a little poker chip over the hole at the bottom, and they do work, but nowhere near as efficiently, and they seem to either hold the water too long and never let it get out into the soil, or they run out into the soil. So I'm not a great fan of them, but they do work, and if you have tons of clay pots, then you might want to play around with that a little bit. The roots didn't seem to grow around it quite as well, but they certainly did grow around it. And I think it has to do with the fact that the clay doesn't hold much water for a long enough period of time, and the roots get a chance to dry away from the surface. With an olla, the surface really doesn't ever really totally dry away, and so your roots don't dry off the surface.
Yeah, in regards...
I hope this is helping you on that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say in regards to, you had talked about some of the niches in the garden for clay pot irrigation. And go ahead.
This is perfect for roof gardens, okay? That's number one. Well, you don't want water running all over the place on a roof. And in Haiti, even though it rains there a lot, there are very dry periods as well. And we've done some roof gardens. We've done... a tire garden where they've cut the rim of the tire off and put soil in it and put ollas in it. We sent information to several countries in Central Asia, and we interviewed some folks here in Albuquerque from Turkmenistan when they were here, and told them about this circumstance, whether it could be done on a porch. A lot of people are limited in land, and quality vegetables are at a premium. So by being able to grow a few tomatoes along a porch edge in containers gives a real nutritional boost to the family. Cabbages, collards, kale, cabbage, broccoli, that family love Hoyas. They just go crazy with them. Squash love Hoyas because they're great water users, and you can kind of economically give them the water this way. You can even grow cucumbers, which like to be moist all of the time but not wet, better with Hoyas, and you can do that with the short vine ones on a porch or a small little patio garden. We like to kind of encourage people to do urban gardening. Everyone can grow a few things, and certainly with Hoyas, it makes it very, very easy because we're all in a hurry. We always make mistakes. We forget to water one day or something like that, and what happens is the Hoya will give you that insurance to carry you over an extra day, most likely, and your plant won't suffer badly in maybe 2 days. But it isn't a technology that you can, and I've read about Hoyas online where people say we can put water in it and come back after 2 weeks and it's still growing the plant and all. I really don't think that's a practical comment. I don't think that's true. But it is like any other irrigation system, regular watering, probably 2 to 3 times a week. During the real hot times, you may need, in the large plants, you may need it every day. But you're still going to be using way, way, way less water. And if you're having to hand carry water, as many people are in the third world, it makes a big, big difference that way. In Senegal, they made some Hoyas about 3 gallons or 4 gallons, and then make another one that's about 4 inches in diameter shorter, and they pack sand between the two and make a lid, and they pour water in the sand and they make kind of a refrigerator out of it. It's really interesting. There's genius all over the world being wasted that we're not harvesting because we look only at high tech.
I would encourage...
This lady, I'm not sure where she was from, but I know that it's a technology that's spreading all over the markets because they couldn't keep their vegetables cool. And this is a way of using an Hoya, a large open pot with 2 layers and then sand in between where you can fill it up, pour the water, and the sand holds the water, and then it evaporates. You couldn't put solid water because it would weep in both directions. You don't want that. You just wet the sand real good, and then as it evaporates out the backside, the outside, it cools the vegetables in the inner little Hoya, or the inner pot.
We are starting to run out of time, Larry, but people who are listening to this and are interested in experimenting with these Hoyas, what can they do to get their hands on some Hoyas?
Well, there's a ministry here in Albuquerque, East Central Ministry, and their webpage is www.eastcentralministries.org. They make and sell Hoyas, and they ship them all over the country. And I encourage you to go to their webpage, go to our webpage. We've got pictures, and they have descriptions on how and why they work and how to use them. I might mention one other way of using Oyas in a more of a mound, and they'll have a picture of that on the ECM page. But they're certainly available. They work. These we've experimented with. We took them down to New Mexico Tech, and they ran some percolation tests through the clay for us and things like that to help kind of regulate how high we should fire them and whatever. And so these are technically advanced, but it's a very, very simple process.
Great. And we will link to your organization's website, seedandlight.org, and we will also link to eCentral Ministries on our webpage for those listeners who are interested in learning more about that. Larry Salee, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us, and I would like to thank you for all the great work that you're doing out there.
Well, thank you very much for having us there.
Well, that does it for today's show. Thank you again, Larry Salee, for joining us. And I did mention in my previous podcast that the work that the folks at eCentral Ministries are doing is good, worthwhile work. They are a Christian organization that is really putting to practice the tenets of Christianity by helping those in need and providing employment for those in need. And one way they are doing that is through the production of these clay pot ollas. Now, as you have heard, this is a great technology for anybody that's working with agriculture and plants and gardening. So if you are in that area and you are working in that realm, I would encourage you to pick up some of these ollas from eCentral Ministries. Like Larry Salee said, they will send you those in the mail so you can order them online and receive them that way. And once again, you'd be supporting a great cause. So go check out their website, have a look, and pick yourself up some ollas so you can experiment them with them in your garden. I'd like to hear from you in terms of feedback from our new website. We've put quite a lot of hours into it, and I feel it looks pretty nice. I had some professional design work done on some of it, did quite a bit of it myself, and I feel like it's quite an improvement on the previous site. You can email me at podcast@agroinnovations.com, or you can give us feedback on our content page, our contact page on our website, which if you click on the link above contact, there's a form, an email form you can fill out and get in touch with me that way. Also, Agricultural Innovations is on Twitter, twitter.com/agroinnovations. So if you would like to follow developments here at Agroinnovations, you can do so via Twitter. And also, we have more great content coming up for you very soon. KMO of the Sea Realm podcast. We will be releasing concurrent interviews next week. An interview where he interviews me for the Sea Realm podcast, and an interview where I interview KMO for the next episode of the Agroinnovations podcast. So that should be interesting, and there's some synergy there. Now, also, please get in touch with me in regards to iTunes. I have set up a 301 redirect for the iTunes feed, and sometimes on my computer, the iTunes feed plays out perfectly, while others are emailing me telling me that they are not getting updates on that. So I'd like to know if y'all are getting the updates of the Agroinnovations podcast on the iTunes feed now that we have rolled over to the new site. And if not, let me know. And if they start to come through as well, please let me know, because I know a lot of you listen to this show via that iTunes feed. I'd like to remind our listeners that this and every episode of the Agroinnovations podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike license, which, as I mentioned in the last episode, is a change. It was under a different license previously, but this license that it is under now, a Creative Commons Sharealike Attribution license, is a blanket license for this and all episodes of the podcast retroactively, even though I have said otherwise in previous episodes. So just keep that in mind. I'm Frank Aragona. This is the Agroinnovations Podcast. Until next time, saludos.